I'm reading from Acts chapter 21, if you want to turn to your in your Bibles. In the Pew Bible, it starts on page 788. So Acts chapter 21, 17 through 36. When we arrived at Jerusalem, the brothers received us warmly. The next day, Paul and the rest of us went to see James, and all the elders were present. Paul greeted them and reported in detail what God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. When they heard this, they praised God. Then they said to Paul, "You see, brother, how many thousands of Jews have believed, and all of them are zealous for the law. They have been informed that you teach all the Jews who live among the Gentiles to turn away from Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or live according to our customs. What shall we do? They will certainly hear that you have come, so do what we tell you. There are four men with us who have made a vow. Take these men, join in their purification rites, and pay their expenses so that they can have their heads shaved. Then everybody will know there is no truth in these reports about you, but that you yourself are living in obedience to the law. As for the Gentile believers, we have written to them our decision that they should abstain from food sacrificed to idols, from blood, from the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality." The next day, Paul took the men and purified himself along with them. Then he went to the temple to give notice of the date when the days of purification would end and the offering would be made for each of them. When the 7 days were nearly over, some Jews from the province of Asia saw Paul at the temple. They stirred up the whole crowd and seized him, shouting, "Men of Israel, help us! This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against our people and our law and this place. And besides, he has brought Greeks into the temple area and defied this holy place." They had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian in the city with Paul and assumed that Paul had brought him into the temple area. The whole city was aroused, and the people came running from all directions. Seizing Paul, they dragged him from the temple, and immediately the gates were shut. While they were trying to kill him, news reached the commander of the Roman troops that the whole city of Jerusalem was in an uproar. He at once took some officers and soldiers and ran down the crowd. When the rioters saw the commander and his soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. The commander came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. Then he asked who he was and what he had done. Some in the crowd shouted one thing and some another. And since the commander could not get at the truth because of the uproar, he ordered that Paul be taken into the barracks. When Paul reached the steps, the violence of the mob was so great he had to be carried by the soldiers. The crowd that followed kept shouting, "Away with him!"
As I was looking at these passages, this week, I was reminded again of how important it is and of my desire for all of us to be good readers. To not just read, but to be good readers, understanding readers, perceptive readers of God's Word. To understand things like genre and, you know, what's narrative or poetry or law versus letters. All these things are important. They really are. Context, so important. I was reminded this week of many things along these lines, how often people will take just a Bible verse and they'll plaster it up on a meme, or they'll just quote it for a particular reason. And my desire for all of us is, one, you see one Bible verse right away, you just think, okay, what is the context? What's going on here? You know, does that mean what we're wanting to mean? Is there something there that I should know more about? We need to be careful. And as we're looking in Acts here, in this narrative of just reading a story, it's so important to ask questions of what the story's talking about. Is there an example, good example to follow? That's often in narrative. Maybe it's just something to say, hey, do that. That's a good thing to do. Maybe it's a negative example. You know, don't do that. Is there a principle? It's not always clear in narrative. We have to put ourselves into that story, so to speak. That's a great thing with stories, and I love it. We can read any story. Josiah is reading Lord of the Rings right now, and it's so much fun to, you know, he's Hey, Dad, just got done with, you know, battle of whatever, whatever. Blanking, I'm embarrassed. Helm's Deep.
Thank you.
Okay, just got done with Helm's Deep, and now we're talking about, and, you know, and when you read something like that, you can just, you can put yourself in it. You know, like identify. You know, I can identify with Frodo, or I can identify, sometimes I identify with Gollum. You know, and that's important. When we look at these stories that, you know, to not just be the hero all the time. Sometimes the point may be, hey, guess what? You're not the hero. Maybe sometimes I'm the Dark Lord in these things. You know, it could be. And we see that here today, I think. Examples to follow. There's heroes. There's bad guys. And maybe sometimes I'm each of them on a day or a week. It's important. It's a challenge to see all these sides and to put myself, maybe by God's Spirit, in an unfavorable light. That could be the challenge. So in our this section today, we're going to focus on one little part, as you'll see here. But overall, we're seeing that Paul came in with a good report. We see that he is falsely accused, how he came up, or he didn't, but they came up with a sensitive solution. And we see then Paul's faithful submission. Okay, that's the broad strokes today for you outline folks that like places and categories. Okay, good report, a false accusation, a sensitive solution, and that's what we'll be camping mostly, but also we see Paul's faithful submission. The good report is pretty straightforward. Paul came to Jerusalem, met with James. This is James, Jesus' brother, okay, because James, the other son of thunder, was killed back in chapter 18, if you recall, all right? So this is James, Jesus' brother, who we see is seems to be acknowledged as the leader of this Jerusalem church, was maybe acknowledged as an apostle. You know, I mean, he'd been with Jesus more than anybody, right? Who knows? Jesus may have teased him when he was little. I always wonder about things like that. You know, did Jesus tease his brothers? I hope so. I don't know why, but there's part of me that just hopes so. All right? So we're seeing growth in the church. We're seeing good things happen. It's exciting. And so along with this growth in Jerusalem, I mean, James is saying thousands. Hyperbole not, I don't know, but lots anyway, for sure. And then Paul's coming with these reports of churches being planted and people being healed and just growth. It's exciting times. It's great. It's wonderful. But, as always, there's always somebody there to throw a fly in the ointment. And we see the same stuff come up, the same tensions, the same problems that have been from the church at the very beginning. Familiar tensions about Jesus, about the law and Jews and the gospel. And we see it come up here again. They're saying to Paul, it's heard that you are teaching a rejection of the law, to reject Moses, to not circumcise your children, and that you're not walking according to customs. Now we know, we've seen throughout this book, over and over again, Paul embracing his freedom, embracing his liberty, right? We love that word liberty, right? It's a great word. And the Bible, in so many places, just rings out freedom, liberty. And Paul and his liberty showed over and over again that, hey, we don't have to do these rites and customs and things to be saved. That was the whole issue. But notice the twisting that is being put upon him. He's forsaking Moses. Paul's not forsaking Moses. He never did. He says the law is good. He didn't say don't circumcise your children. What did Paul do with Timothy back in chapter 16? Had him circumcised for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of just not causing offense. Turn real quick to, in fact, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Because here Paul kind of lays out his thoughts on these things, and we really see his attitude. Okay, it's not one of rejecting, but let's see what it is. So chapter 7, verse 18, Paul wrote this. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. Here's the key. For neither circumcision counts for anything, nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. So at the end of the day, Paul's just saying, whatever, folks. You want to be circumcised? Go right ahead. And if you don't get circumcised, that's fine too. But he never, ever preached, again, as they're accusing him here, of just saying you shouldn't at all. And I remember that for Jews, their entire identity is wrapped up in who they were as God's people, as a nation, and the traditions and things. And so no matter what, this is a hard pill to swallow in many ways, and we've seen that over and over again. But it was not true. So then we get to James's solution. So James has always been thinking about this. He's going, oh, Paul's going to be here. Oh, man, that guy. We love him. He's hard to understand. But it seems like trouble follows him wherever he goes. So what was the solution to this? And here's where it gets weird. I don't know about you, but I read this. I'm going, what in the world's going on? He says, I got four guys that took a vow. Tell you what, you go with them, pay for them. They can shave their heads. Everybody will be happy. Makes total sense, right? You got it? Okay, so we can just move on. All right. What's going on here? Why would that help? What is it? If he does that, then what's going on here? Well, I think one thing, what is this vow? That's the first question, right? Again, we're being good readers here. For example, okay, what is this vow? We don't know. All right, that's the bottom line. But we do have some clues. Could be one of probably three things. Okay, one, maybe in the way they looked at it, Paul himself was unclean because he'd been out with Gentiles, came in contact with them, and there's these guys who were also under a vow, like a Nazirite vow. Okay, then there's your other question. What is a Nazirite vow? All right? The Nazirite means dedicated or consecrated. Okay, it was like being ordained, set apart, making a special promise. You were thinking, I want to be right with God. I'm going to make this vow as a show of my devotion, so to speak. Okay? And it's usually for a period of 30 days. You make this vow, and there are three parts to it. Okay? No fruit of the vine. Okay? Wine, intoxicants of any kind. Okay? Two, no razor. Okay? You can't cut your hair, shave, anything like that. And then three was, don't come in contact with a dead body. Okay? So in the middle, you know, if you're 15 days into this vow and your mother dies, too bad. They can have the funeral. You are not going anywhere near that. That's how serious this was. All right? So these three things. And so the thought is that Paul, in his uncleanness, then would just join these guys who are coming to the end of their vow so they could fulfill it, shave their head, and then everybody. See, and I think the point is that what will be seen is from the outside, people look at that and go, oh, see, look at Paul does respect the customs. He is being respectful of our traditions and the ceremonies that are important to who we are as Jews. Now, the second thing could be simply that these men were taking their vow. Maybe they, for some reason, got unclean in the middle of it, possibly. And if that happens, then usually you have to go like an extra 7 days to make sure you're clean. So maybe Paul is just going to kind of jump in on their end of their vow, and again, show that he supports the traditions. And the third one could be, and I'm not sure about this, but if you remember back in chapter 18, Paul made a vow and cut his hair. It just makes reference. So maybe that's a reference to some vow that he took there. Okay, all that to say, the solution was optics. Show the Jewish believers, again, that's what we're talking about here, Jewish believers, that you are not rejecting everything with our heritage. That you do respect the traditions, that you do respect and uphold good things that we are as a people, and how important that is. Okay, so if that's the case, all right, again, so now whenever you read this, that's what we're thinking, all right? It just shows respect. Now, did Paul have to do this? Was Paul in any way guilty of anything in all this? No. Paul was very liberated. But the implications then are, and the question should be, why then? Is he compromising something here? Now, for Paul, this is not an issue. First, he's showing his dedication to being a Jew. I think Paul loves being a Jew. I think Paul was so happy and blessed. He talks about that a lot, how fortunate he was that he could be born this way, to experience God this way. But he was acting here in a cultural sensitivity to the people around him. And then in the context that he was in now, he wants to show that, hey, I can be part of this. And that's been Paul's ministry principle throughout everything he's doing. As the apostle to Gentiles, Paul said, hey, I'll be a Gentile for Gentiles. I'll be a Jew for a Jew. Whatever. He didn't care. He said, I will be all things, all people. All I want is people to know Jesus. However that can be, Paul was the most liberated person ever. He could care less. Even his liberty. I said, I don't care. He was willing to concede. It wasn't a compromise. He wasn't compromising anything. He wasn't compromising the gospel. He wasn't compromising witness with anybody, but he was conceding his own rights, his own liberty, his own emancipated life for the sake of others, for the sake of unity, for the sake of the gospel. He was willing to give up all these things. Paul restricted his own freedom for the sake of others. There's a theologian, his last name is Bach. I can't remember his first name. I didn't take time to find it. But he said, put it this way, and this is very interesting. Liberty is a great thing, right? 4th of July, right? What do we celebrate? We celebrate liberty. We celebrate living in a country that has seen freedoms that the world has never seen before. So liberty is a great thing, and we would all say, amen, brother. But the expression of liberty can be counterproductive. You hear that? Liberty is a great thing, absolutely. Liberty in Christ, liberty in politics, whatever it is. But the expression of that liberty can be counterproductive if it counteracts the gospel, if it hinders the gospel, if it puts down others, if it comes as a barrier in any way. And Paul showed he was willing to give that up. That hymn you picked, Brad, the 10,000 angels, expressed that so well. Jesus could have called down angels. It was completely unjust. Completely. And he showed us he was willing to give it all up for the sake of others. Again, as I said, the solution was not a compromise, but a concession. It was a morally neutral area. And he said, hey, that's fine. Yeah, I'll do a vow. I'll shave my head. Whatever. As long as we're not fighting each other. So that brings us, as good readers here, folks, where do we fit the story? Now, sometimes we may be Paul, unjustly accused. We may be that him as someone in our own tribe of evangelical Christians or from worldly folks, from governments, from rules and regulations. We may say it's unfair, and we're falsely accused of many things. And that's us, then. We have a great example, don't we? That maybe it's not about my rights. Maybe sometimes it's not about my liberty. Maybe I can be willing to say, you know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Now, the uncomfortable point might be, can we maybe sometimes put ourselves in the accusing Jews' place? Are we them some? And I think uncomfortably we have to say yes, right? I mean, I cannot be so arrogant in the grace that God has shown me that I would say, no, I'm perfectly sinless in all these things all the time. That's why it's so important to hear God's Spirit say, am I the accuser here sometimes? Am I on my Facebook page and I see something that somebody says I disagree with and I just torch them because of my righteousness and rightness? It can make us very uncomfortable, very easily, very quickly. So I was trying to think of some things that would, how does this apply sometimes? And, you know, because, well, you know, I'm hesitant. It's like, oh, I don't want to step on toes. I hate that. But, okay, just for fun, what kind of liberties? Again, talking about liberty here. What kind of liberties do we experience that maybe we would want to give up? I thought about, you know, because what we're talking about was culture or ceremony or tradition. Do any of us ever get our toes stepped on in our culture or in our traditions? Just within Christendom, some folks sing hymns and play an organ. Some folks have been in church services where they had a jazz saxophone player and the guy with a beret on leading worship. I mean, the whole scope of things. Now, would I be comfortable in the... I've probably said this before. I went to a church, Sharon and I visited a church in California once. And the whole model is fascinating. They had bought a industrial park kind of thing. Okay, it was all these buildings with garage doors, you know, and streets in between. And they bought the whole thing. And you walk in, there's a menu, literally. Okay, let's see. Do I want to go to the traditional hymn service? Oh, this looks interesting. Here's the coffee bar light jazz service. Oh, here is the, you know, heavy metal service. And, you know, whatever, just on down the line. Fascinating. And what they would do is you go to these different things, sing, and then the pastor who's doing the sermon would get broadcast to all of them at the same time, all this the same message. It was weird. I didn't like it at all, but, you know, hey, that's me, right? I thought it was just odd. But that's kind of whose toes are you going to step on? I said, well, let's just do whatever you want to. Now, some of us might, again, we might just say that's ridiculous, and we'll condemn, accuse. We get our toes stepped on. Am I willing to give up my liberty and what I think is right for the sake of the gospel? And this church was. They said, hey, you know, okay, I'm not going to the heavy metal service, but wow, there's a whole bunch of people that are going to that one. All right, I'll deal with it. That's important. But sometimes there's other things that may be a little more difficult. Now, I was trying to think of an example, and I think just because it's low-hanging fruit, because we just celebrated the 4th of July, how about something like, I don't know, the flag, right? The flag. People get very touchy about the flag, don't they? It's in the news right now. We are having people, you know, who, athletes, who are turning away from the flag at a medal ceremony, right? It's in the news, right? We have, you know, people accusing Christians of worshiping the flag instead of God. We have Christians saying, you know, we should, you know, be a godly nation, so we should respect the flag. What do we do with all this, right? What do we do with these sorts of things? Are we willing, in our patriotism, politic, willing just to say, I will give up my liberty for the sake of... And I'm not asking us, or I don't think Paul even is, he's not giving up his deeply held beliefs here. He's not, and nor should we. But he was willing to put himself in that other place. So I hear something like, yeah, an athlete that, you know, steps down and refuses to do the national anthem or something like that. Okay? Do I think that's okay? Nah, no, I mean, what's the deal? You know, it's disrespectful? Sure, it is. All right? Am I willing to enter into where that athlete, and just ask the question, why? What is it? Am I really willing to hear that, even if I don't disagree? Am I willing to embrace them? Am I willing to accept them, even though they are doing something outlandish in respect to something like a flag? Again, hypothetically speaking here, say I'm talking with Brad here, and I just say something, you know, sometimes I think it's kind of weird having a flag in church. Maybe it's kind of idolatrous. What do you think? You know, now maybe, you know, Mary hears me say that and goes, oh, did you hear Steve? He's an anti-American. My goodness, he's probably a Marxist now, for goodness sakes. He doesn't want a flag in our church. You think that doesn't happen in our world? You think there's not churches out there right now that are burning down, metaphorically speaking, over issues like this? And for me, and I think for Paul, sometimes you can say, who cares? I mean, we can care. Not to say we don't care, okay? I know I'm treading a line here, I understand. But Paul, the example that Paul gives, the example that Jesus gives us over and over again, is there's some things that are important. This flag, yes, I'm happy the American. I mean, God has blessed me. That's unreal. In the history of the world, the things that we experience in this country is unbelievable. And I'm happy for it, and I acknowledge the sacrifice of tens of hundreds of thousands of people who gave this opportunity for me to live in this place. And sure, you know, I may disagree with somebody who's protesting or thinks a different way. I don't have to give up that thought, but I think about Jesus. Could have called 10,000, he could have stopped it all. He didn't. That's how I want us to place ourselves in the narratives. To always, always, always think about the other in love and acceptance. Not necessarily the ideas, but for the sake of the gospel, am I willing to concede my opinions? Am I willing to concede what I think is proper for the sake? That's a great question. And again, it's tricky, and I know it's probably not the best always. It's difficult. But when your temptation is to go off on someone, for whatever issue, to take someone down, to automatically judge somebody because of the way they vote, or automatically judge someone because of the church they attend, or the particular doctrinal issue that they think is important. If my initial reaction is that barrier, again, it may be appropriate, it may be. But I think what we're seeing here is maybe I just need to check that for the sake of unity, for the sake of peace, for the sake of the gospel. Well, there's another place we can go with this, and I think, I hope that throughout the week, maybe you can just consider other examples. There's all kinds of things. I was thinking this week, I'm reading a book about the history of women in the church, and this, you know, it's very funny. This one woman, she's a PhD in English literature, attends a church, her husband's on staff with it. They had kind of a shortage, and they asked her to teach a high school Sunday school. Okay, I mean, how more qualified could this person be, right? I mean, she's amazing. She had to go to the pastor and receive a special approval because she's a woman. And that the only reason that she was able to teach the class was because he said, well, if you just lead a discussion about the sermon, it'll be okay. But if you're teaching the Bible itself, that's not okay. Now, again, I'm not taking a stand here, folks, all right? This is, yeah, okay, I'm not right now. I could. I'll talk to you about it if you want, all right? But you see how quickly that can just blow up? Now, wherever you fall on these sorts of things, the consideration is what... Is this a gospel issue? Is it, you know, maybe, maybe not? And it's complicated, but we have to take these things into account and be willing at least say, you know, I don't agree, maybe even strongly, but I still love you. And in this situation, in this book, it ended up really bad. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart to have that kind of a witness. People expelled from a church, a husband fired because of his wife things. Yeah. All right. So there was a sensitive solution to a problem. And Paul took it. He said, hey, I don't care. I'll shave my head, whatever. If it brings peace, let's do it. But then we see, and the conflict arises again. And we see Paul, and I headed it, is faithful submission. Because he did all these things for the sake of peace. It seems like, again, within the believing community, it seemed to have done what it was supposed to do. But then some Jews, again, not believers, some Jews that knew of Paul from Asia, Ephesus, somewhere probably, saw Paul, went, hey, that's that guy. That's that guy. And he got the whole town whipped up against him. A false accusation. This wasn't true at all. The bringing the guy into the temple, that didn't happen, but they just assumed maybe it did. They assumed all these things. It was completely false. And you see the crowd get whipped up. We saw him taken. They grabbed him. They took him to the temple area. They shut the gates. They're going to kill him. That was their intention. They beat him. Now, you know, I don't know how much time this was. You know, for the authorities to say, hey, what's going on? Get somebody, you know, organized, decide what they're going to do, to show up, to knock on the door, make sure they open it. This whole time, folks, they're beating Paul. I can't imagine. But what's interesting is, as we talked about last week, Paul knew this was coming. This is not a surprise. I was trying to imagine the scene, you know, and these people kicking him and hitting him and just bruised and blood and him thinking, oh, so this is what you meant, Lord. Okay, all right. He was warned, but he faithfully submitted to God's will here. This was not a surprise. He took the hard path, even though it was unjust, even though it was wrong, even though his rights were being completely trampled, he faithfully submitted to God's will. And this was indeed his will. And as we continue forward, I mean, from here on out, we see Paul as prisoner. For the rest of his life, that is his identity. A prisoner in Jerusalem, he's going to move on to Rome, and eventually he's going to be killed. He's a prisoner the rest of his life. And that is, again, I think an example to follow. That his eyes were on Christ. His eyes were on eternity. His sensitivity was listening to the Spirit. Not what other people thought, not even what the world would say is the right thing to do. I mean, no, don't go down the path that gets you beaten. Paul submitted himself for the sake of others, for the sake of the gospel. He said, Lord, I have to imagine, like he says in Romans, I consider the sufferings of this present time not worthy to compare to the glory that's to be revealed to us. So, you know, and we could put whatever in that sentence. I consider the sufferings of the present time. I consider the blessings of this current time not worthy to compare. I consider the sickness of this time not worth comparing the glory. I consider the breaking up of relationships not worthy to compare to the glory, right? That's what Paul gave us an example. If God calls us that way, if that is the path that he has for us, then we say yes, Lord. Yes. Are we willing to take the hard path? Are we willing to give up our liberty? Are we willing to pour ourselves out for the sake of other people? That is the narrative that Luke is calling us into. And that is the narrative that Christ has called us to think of others, to consider not our own liberty or freedoms or whatever, but to him in all things. And that is where we want to be. And so we go in that. I know. Sometimes to be a good reader is hard. Sometimes the path is hard, and that is the beginning. To call someone to Christ and say it's easy is to do disservice. It's narrow. It's hard. I thought this was some of the paths that Em and I were hiking on, that spear hiking trip. I'm going to talk about narrow roots. You know, and you got packing. Yeah, I could have gone to the highway. It would have been easy, but not as beautiful. Definitely not. That is the path forward in this knowledge of God. Amen.